the most disgusting, twisted, horrible, despicable,
oh, man.
Atrocious.
Oh, man.
One more.
Deplorable,
yes.
Well done.
Atrocity of a movie
it's
that
terrible.
I've ever seen. Just enjoyed Manazashi Daydream from the anime Nodame Cantabile finale by the artist Yu Sakai, and this is the 30th episode of the Anime Addicts Anonymous podcast. Man, I know it's been a long time coming, but we finally made it to 30 episodes, so this is going to be a special episode. Today, we have with me several guests. We have Kimiko, as well as Chiaki, and Hatake. And of course, we also have a special guest host with us tonight. We have Chris from the Anime Super Happy Anime Fun Time podcast. So we're going to have a great time with him. And you can find us on AAApodcast.com. You can also find us on iTunes, Facebook, Mevio, and of course, ADDnetwork.net. So come check us out. I think you really like us. Support those websites, they're really good, and we hope you enjoy the show. And just to get things moving, a couple
Holy
announcements.
Holy new forum members, Nixie.
Holy new forum members. We have 11 new forum members. We have Soul Down, Sean Alpha, Lelouch Yagami, Oi 1984, Under the Air, Plixic, Ave Spiegel, Gundam 1AZ, Hollow Soul, Grizzly Bear, which is my personal favorite, and Jay Bushman.
Welcome to the forums, guys. I see a lot of new names that aren't just people moving from our old forums. Not that the people moving from our old forums aren't important, too.
We still love you.
But it's good to see new people and the old.
I think it's like the Girl Scout theme.
I love Girl Scout cookies.
Oh my god.
Thin mints.
Peanut butter patties.
Yes.
Wait.
S'mores. Anybody like Yuri's?
I like the s'mores.
Girl overload. Ah. Anyway, so we have a trivia winner for the week.
Oh my god!
Would you like to announce it, Chiaki, since you picked it?
Well, I didn't. Okay, I didn't pick it. I randomly chose
random
it.
Random selection.
If you say I pick it, it makes it sound like okay.
You anyway. Randomly picked
favoritism.
It.
Favoritism.
Oh dear. So one of our new forum members won the question. That's currently up now, and that's Planetez. Actually, it probably won't be up on this by this. Time it comes up.
Yeah, by the time you hear this, there'll be a new trivia question.
Yeah, but the question, the answer to the question that is up at the time we are recording, and that is the last question that was up before the question that is up now, answer was Planetes. The winner was Under the Air, and Under the Air actually swept the trivia. They won.
The overall winner for the month is Under the Air, and you will have your choice between either the first volume of the Hajime no Ippo anime series or Paradise Kiss.
Both are very good.
So I'll be contacting you on the forum soon. Also, we named our mascot. We had a poll on our website, and there were like 10 different names.
Ooh, who won?
And the name that Chiaki proposed won. which is Yamitsuki, and I guess we'll just call her Yami-chan.
And just so everyone knows, that name actually is like a Japanese kind of word for addiction or like severe liking kind of addict. So
that's appropriate.
It seemed to make sense.
It came in with something like 35% of the votes, followed by Nanashi-chan, who Bakuhazu proposed that name, and a very strange name, Iropoi Irene by Makapuchi. Both had about, I don't know, 10% or so.
Thanks for the suggestions, guys.
In the meantime, I'm probably going to throw up a random just poll question just to see what you guys think about some random thing that I feel like putting up there. But soon we'll probably start our character battle.
And then we're going to have the character battle in the following week. So we'll have a couple weeks of bracket registration, and then we'll get started. Thank you, GameFAQs, for the idea. There will be a new trivia question posted soon. And on this episode of the podcast, we're going to be discussing with our guest host, Chris, from the Anime Super Happy Anime Funtime podcast. And then we're going to be discussing anime movies based after series and all of the pertinent questions that come with those. And then we're going to be doing some reviews. I am going to review Time of Eve or Eve no Gicon. Chiaki is going to review a user-requested anime, Appleseed Ex Machina. Kimiko is going to do Cowboy Bebop, and then Chris is going to review Metropolis. So as you can see, we have an awesome episode for you today.
Awesome!
And we made it through that opening pretty punctually. 5 minutes.
I'm proud of us.
Anyway.
Record.
So,
still struggling with internet.
Alright, so, hi Chris.
Hi.
I like your shaft.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. I really wanted to say that.
That was great.
Do you get that often from girls?
Occasionally.
Just say.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
Okay, so you run a video podcast. By my understanding, it started out as an audio and
yes.
moved to video. It's called Shaft or Super Anime Happy.
Super Happy Anime Fun Time.
There we go. That yep. spelling thing doesn't work out for me.
Yeah.
So why a video podcast? What made you guys, what prompted you to say, you know what, the world needs to see our beautiful faces?
It wasn't primarily because we felt that the world needed to see our faces. It was more of, you know, we had been doing the audio podcast for 3 years. We had recorded over 140 episodes, and we kind of felt like it was the next step to take, primarily because there really wasn't, or there really isn't much of a video anime podcast out there. I mean, you have Anime TV, which is alright, and you have AnimeCons.com, but there was really nothing quite like what we wanted to do out there, so we decided to create one ourselves.
Okay. What do you feel is, I guess maybe you could say, the benefits, or what do you feel you can offer as a video podcast that an audio podcast might, you know, that you might have felt that you were lacking or couldn't do with your audio podcast, aside from, again, the obvious yeah. people seeing your beautiful faces?
We wanted it to be kind of more interactive. We had a lot more ideas that didn't really quite translate well to audio, like a lot more type of sight gags type of stuff that we wanted to play around with, and video was a better medium for us to use it with. So,
All right. Well, I was listening to your podcast. I'm not quite sure what the proper terminology is. If it's still a podcast, if it has video, or if it's then a VCast.
Yeah, we're still calling it a podcast.
So I'll just call it a podcast for
okay.
sake of ease. I heard on your podcast that you're going to Anime Boston.
Yes.
We have a lot of forum members who have been talking about Anime Boston, that they're going to go, from our group of people. What are you most looking forward to about the con? Or, like, what do you most look forward to when you go to a con? What's that one thing that you're like, oh, I got to go to that?
Well, for Anime Boston in particular, because we've gone to video, we're kind of excited because we're going to try out a new way of how we've been covering Anime Boston in the past. So I'm not going to say too much and just say that look for it in April as to when we release the shows. But in particular with Anime Boston, we've kind of gotten a rapport with the staff there. We also enjoy, I mean, it's 45 minutes from our house, so it's not that long of a commute. A few of the things that we like to check out is Anime Unscripted, which is pretty much Whose Line Is It Anyway, but for with voice actors of anime.
Brilliant.
Yes. And then it's just, I think for us, it's pretty much just the general overall atmosphere of the convention. You get to really interact with the fans, talk with them, see what they like, what they don't like, and it's just a way for us to gather with like-minded people who like the same things that we do and not feel weird around a large group of people, you know?
Right. Another thing that from when I was listening to your podcast, you guys called it the news chunks and were like, chunky or something like that. That made me giggle personally. I didn't know if there was any kind of story to how you came up with that name, just because it's creative, I'm not sure is the right word, but let's go with it for now.
It's pretty much just something that Gene's come up with, and because I've done so many shows, it's kind of hard to remember it, but I believe it might have morphed from some stuff that we were doing in the audio show as well. And I think that was just kind of one of the things that had carried over from the audio shows.
Right. One of the things we recently talked about on our podcast, and I can't remember if or when you guys talked about on yours, so feel free to flog me when we start recording. But we talked about recently the new anime season, that is the spring 2010 season. Is there any anime that you in particular are like really looking forward to?
Yeah, there's pretty much just two that I'm really looking forward to this season. It's the Iron Man anime that's coming out.
Oh, me too.
As well as the season two of K-On!
I assume you are a season one K-On! Fan?
Yes, I have yet to complete the series, but from what I've seen so far, I really do enjoy it. So.
It was everywhere in Japan when I was over there. Like,
yeah.
You couldn't escape it, so it is really big. If you could get to interview one person in the anime industry on your show, who would it be and why? And I will say that if it helps you decide, the person can be deceased, like, since this is a vast hypothetical to begin with.
Okay. Let's see. That's a tough question to just narrow it down to one person.
I know.
But
by the way, let's say that there's no language barrier.
Okay. I think for me personally, the one person that I'd really like to interview would be Vic Mignogna. And I know it's an unusual choice, but I just find him kind of interesting with the roles that he chooses and I don't know, just the way he plays the characters and everything, so.
I think you just made some fans over here.
Yeah.
I love Vic Mignogna, not gonna lie.
He is a really great dude. He helped us out one MegaCon with, I don't know, it's way back in one of our early episodes, but he recorded a little snippet for us and was very nice, so we like Mignogna
nice.
Over here.
Yep.
What about anime grinds your gears? What in the anime world can you not stand? Like, if you see it, you just vomit in your mouth and go on a rampage.
Well said.
I mean, off the top of my head, there's really not much that I can think of that's actually in anime that really gets me upset. And for the most part, if I do see something, then I'm not going to bother with. Just thinking right now, the one thing that really upset me was the melancholy of Haruhi Suzumiya, the way Bandai decided to release the DVD release, I guess, instead of releasing it in broadcast form, where when you're watching it on DVD, it doesn't really make much sense and just upsets you that they spend 6 hours or six episodes on plot development and then throw it out the window and just kind of have filler for the rest of the way. But I mean, in anime in general and the people that are involved with anime, I would have to say probably just the overall elitism that's out there, where people aren't open to other people's opinion and think that they're right no matter what.
No, I can understand that, and we've mentioned before that how dubbing companies and licensing companies decide to bring anime over to America is oftentimes creative at best.
Yeah.
Here's a cliche question, and you can interpret favorite in any way you want, but what's your favorite anime and why?
I primarily have actually technically kind of three. First one is Death Note, just because I absolutely love the plot in Light Yagami as a character. Just the whole cat and mouse between him and L, although the latter half of the series kind of makes me a little upset with the way they handle other characters, but I won't go too far into that. My second one is Full Metal Alchemist, but Brotherhood more, just because it's I absolutely love the manga story much better than what they tried to do with the first series. Plus the animation styling and whatnot is a little bit more upgraded from what the original series was. And then the third is the movie that I'm going to be reviewing is Metropolis. It's just one of those series, or I should say anime, that just encompasses everything that I like with underground movements and just revolutions and whatnot. So,
excellent. I think I just have to say, I think you might have some fans.
Legit, man. Legit. You rock.
You might have some people here who might agree with some of the things you said.
Maybe.
Okay.
A little.
So,
don't get up.
I don't really have any other questions, but is there anything that you would want the world, and by the world I mean the people who listen to us.
It's the world.
It is the world. It's the only world that matters.
Yeah.
I mean, is there anything you'd want people to know about you or your podcast, or just anything else you
want to say? I'll say this. Gene and I are planning on creating a lot more content, whether it be video or audio podcasts. So if you want to kind of stay up to date with what we do, you can check out our YouTube page, youtube.com/132productions. We usually post about a bi-monthly update as to what we're doing. I also am currently producing my own show. It's a Christian-based podcast. If anyone's interested in checking out, you can go to unnamedchristian.com. I do that with one of my other friends, and it's a bi-weekly show that we just get together and just talk about news topics and movies and music and whatnot. So that's about it.
And I'll put the link, of course, to you guys' website, and you're our friends, so you're already on our index page for anyone curious. But in the episode description for this, just for the people listening, I'll put the link to their YouTube website in the description on our website, just so that it's easy for everyone to find.
Okay.
So thank you so much for letting me mini interview and coming on our podcast. We have a lot more lined up and a lot more fun, so we'll jump right into that right after we get back from the news with Kimiko. Yo everyone, this is Kimiko, and it's time for another spiff-tastic, smexalicious dish of anime news. So, the Anime Network Video On Demand service has announced that it will be running the English dub version of the slice-of-life anime, Clannad, this month. The first two episodes are going to be available on March 25th and then online for free at Anime Network's website by March 26th. So it's going to be adding one episode per week after that, and subsequent episodes will be available to premium subscribers only. So for the premium subscribers, enjoy that. It'll be awesome. Clannad. Studio Ghibli has produced a commercial to mark the 110th anniversary of a Japanese food and manufacturing conglomerate called Mishun Seifun Group. Goro Miyazaki, who's the son of Hayao Miyazaki, if you guys didn't know, and the Ponyo animation director Katsuya Kondo oversaw the studio's first attempt to create an animation work entirely based on brush pen calligraphy, which is really cool. The cat Konyara in the commercial is based on a kitten that Ghibli producer Toshio Suzuki himself drew. The 15-second and 30-second versions of the commercial can be seen on Nishin's website. On Saturday, the Japanese studio Toei Animation launched a website to confirm the October 30th opening of Heart Catch Precure, the film, with a 30-second streaming video. The Heart Catch Precure revamp of the Precure, Magical Girl anime franchise, premiered on Japanese television February 7th. And Chiaki did quite the review on it, if you guys want to go back and listen to that. So, if you're interested in Heart Catch Precure, check out the film. It's right up your alley. If not, I'd avoid it. During its second week of sales, Miyazaki and Ghibli's Ponyo film ranked number 9 in Blu-ray disc sales and number 10 in overall sales in the US, the week ending on March 14th. The film fell off of the top 10 for DVD sales and in-video rental sales for the week, unfortunately, but 22% of the total unit sales were Blu-ray, so congratulations to Ponyo. During its first week of sales, though, on the plus side, the film ranked number 3 in Blu-ray disc sales and number 4 in DVD, so Ponyo's doing pretty good. And that was your delectable morsel of anime news deliciousness. Back to you, Mitsuki.
Thanks for the news.
Anytime.
Excellent.
God, I love that news.
What's good for you?
Better. Well, good thing I have another chance.
I was gonna say, I'll have another break soon.
Anyway.
Okay.
So now we're going to discuss anime movies based after anime series that are not Ghibli. We're not gonna mention any Ghibli here.
Or as much as Shinkai.
We love Ghibli. We talk about Ghibli too much. And all the pertinent questions.
I love you, Miyazaki. And
so, all right, I've got 5 questions written down here, and the first question is, I think, what is the difference between self-contained anime movies and movies based on series? It just seems to me that almost all of the acclaimed anime films are self-contained. Like, I can't think of any, like, you know, your random Lupin movie or your random, like, Naruto movie. It just, they're never acclaimed films. It's always Millennium Actress, Tokyo Godfathers, Paprika, Ram Ghibli film. You know what I mean?
Pick on the Naruto film here.
Pick on the Naruto films.
Yeah, there's Naruto films, man.
I didn't even know they existed.
I didn't either.
Me either.
Like,
a bunch of them.
How could you not know?
I'm glad you're there with us, Chris. I don't know. I think the thing for me personally is that, like, if you're making your own film, you create the whole world. For better or for worse, you create everything. Like, you have full artistic liberty. Where it's like, if you're creating a movie, you have to act within the space of a world that's already given to you. And then beyond that, like, the series might have, like, specifications that might prevent you from doing things that you can't do. So it's like, unless you have a movie like Eden of the East where it is the ending, then you can't just, like, you can't just have, like, a movie where, I don't know, like, where a Lupin movie where Lupin dies. Like, really dies.
But if
you just can't have it. Lupin has to come back for the next episode.
But first of all, Lupin never dies. Second of all, if you're talking about movies being able to be, like, acclaimed and amazing because they create an original world, I would argue that already having, like, taking an anime series like Escaflowne, which already has an incredible world set up, these people should have an advantage making movies that they're basically handed material that they can build upon. You understand what I mean?
Yeah, but see, sometimes they have the opportunity to go beyond what it is, like, give you information that you don't really know exists based on the series, like with Samurai X to Rurouni Kenshin, where they give you all of the pre-stuff. And it's all of this, you know, answering questions and information that we see throughout the series, and even going beyond that in the final portion, you know, and answering all the questions at the end, too. Like, adding things that we don't get either, you know, beyond just answering the questions that are left out in the series.
I wonder if there's a lot of pressure on people that make movies after series to not screw it up.
Probably.
Of course there is.
A lot of,
likely.
I mean, Conqueror of Shambhala, people were freaking out.
Yeah.
I've heard a lot of mixed things about Conqueror of Shambhala. Like, it's very easy to get half the people really excited and half the people just wanting to tear down Funimation Studios or tear down the walls.
People were getting ready to tear down Funimation Studios over the Dance and the Vampire.
Dance and the Vampire. Oh, man.
I know that's an issue for another time, but I'm really sorry. That anime that they licensed, like, Mystic Witches, or whatever the heck it was called.
Strike Witches.
Strike Witches, yeah. So much more lolicon in that anime than in Dance and the Vampire Boom.
People are making a stink about that, too.
They didn't touch the Strike Witches, though.
Like, they did.
Not as much.
Well, maybe not as much, but, like, I watched Dance of the Vampire, but I didn't find it to be particularly...
But anyways...
Anyway, sorry.
So, Shambhala, yeah. So, Chris, love that movie. What do you think about, like, you know, do you think movies based after series or whatever have a chance to become, like, great acclaimed works, or do you think they're kind of stuck in a rut?
I think they're stuck in a rut. I mean, no one's really made a movie that gets that acclaimed status yet. I mean, it's not like it can never not happen, but it just seems like people are so, or the studios are so thinking in the box and not trying to find other ways to kind of remain in that universe yet make it something fantastic.
Right.
I think you're right. I mean, the only example I can think of, and I wrote down just about every animated movie I had seen that's based after a series. The only example I can think of a probably acclaimed movie is, and I know I said I wouldn't mention Ghibli, but this technically isn't Ghibli, is the Lupin the Third, Castle of Cagliostro.
That's not really that acclaimed, though.
That movie is acclaimed, and it's 30 years old. It's like it's been 30 years since I can think of an example of a movie that, you know, deserves, like, people still remember it, even though it's made in the late 70s. And I don't know, I think it's acclaimed. I mean, acclaimed is kind of a opinionated term, but anyway.
I mean, did it win anything?
I don't know. I mean, it's so old.
That usually what makes it acclaimed.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of thinking, is like praise by critics.
Anyway,
but one of the things that pissed me off is movies that are, like, rather than being based off a series or answering questions, they just try to retell the whole series in, like, an hour and 40 minutes. And I'm like, if the series took, you know, 24 episodes, which would be 12 hours to tell the full story, why do you try to squish it down into an hour and a half? And, like, examples would be the retelling of Air in the movie, or, like, Escaflowne the movie. And I don't think it can win. It's trying to take this expansive story and just cram it down.
So basically you're talking about alternate retellings.
Exactly. But rather than, like, an alternate retelling that offers, like, you know, what if, like, I'd almost say Clannad, the end, rather than trying to squish the multiple endings into the series, not to have too many spoilers, but if they made a movie that was like Clannad but with a different ending.
Well, actually there is a Clannad movie. However, the movie for Clannad came first, so the series is actually an alternate retelling of the movie, which is a retelling of a game.
Right, but do you get what I'm saying? It was like rather than at the end of the last three episodes of Clannad, them telling like three different endings, like have like a movie where it would be like a new ending.
Is that comparable to Eden of the East, where they just decided to?
No, but that is the ending. It's not like a retelling.
I guess so. So you're saying, instead of just saying alternate and just making it like the same story, really truly make it alternate.
Exactly. Like, people say it's an alternate retelling, but you have like the Gurren Lagann movie. I mean, do you want to talk about that?
That was me crying. I don't know. Do I really want to talk about it? There were two. The second one was good, but the first one...
Honestly, I thought the parallel works better than the movie.
Mm-hmm. Chris, so. don't you just feel like sometimes these anime movies are just an excuse to milk a couple extra bucks out of like a series that's basically already in its mature phase?
Yeah, I mean, kind of getting slightly off of that. I had one kind of gripe that I've seen with anime movies before, and I'm going to use Blade of the Phantom Master as an example, where it seems like they've written out the story and they have enough to flesh out a 13-episode series, but rather than doing that, they'll just do an hour-and-a-half movie. And you end up watching this and you want more because you don't get the backstory of some of these characters. They just kind of know each other and have this feud going. And you as the viewer are just kind of supposed to accept that and not question it at all. And then, like I said again, it just leaves you wanting more and wanting to find out who these people are and why they're in this situation, basically.
Right. So, does anybody have anything else they want to contribute to this point?
Well, I mean, you mentioned Eden of the East. Like, kind of, I guess that's kind of moving on, though. That's not really the same point.
Well, to move on, then, anime series that end with movies, do you like this?
Well, it's kind of...
That's a big depends.
Like, Eden of the East, yeah. I can think, is the first one that actually had, like, a series where the ending is dependent.
There must be other examples.
Well, and Conqueror of Shambhala is another one of those. I mean, just to bring it back, I apologize.
Yeah.
But it kind of, I mean, you can go through the entire series and not watch it, but it's still necessary to answer all of those little questions, because you really do leave the series going like, well, what exactly happens next?
Yeah, it's not a very happy ending to the series.
Yeah, not so much, but it's you know, the film kind of answers all of those little... The things that leave us at the very end of the series wanting more, you know, we feel a little bit unfulfilled, the movie kind of gives us that, in a sense. I mean, maybe not, to some people, maybe not exactly enough.
Not really what you wanted for the ending, either.
But it still, you know, it still gives you something, as opposed to leaving you completely in the dark at the very end of the series. But, you know, that's the sort of movie, sometimes, that you get with the...
Well, I just say that I don't like it. I think that in Eden of the East, instance, which is just a good example because I think people remember it most because it was recent, I think it stinks that they make a series and then they just end it and expect people to wait like 6 to 8 months to watch a movie that is supposedly going to end the series. I think that's not only is it crappy because they're basically they expect people to pay like an extra $60 just to finish an anime that they should have just finished in the first place. They obviously know what the story is. Why they just finish it in 2 more episodes. But, I mean, will people even care about Eden of the East 8 months from now enough to watch? I mean, the movie's already out, at least the first one is. But, you know, 6 months ago or whatever, will people even care enough to come and get the movie later? Will they even remember what Eden of the East was about when the time comes to watch the movie? I mean...
I guess that makes sense.
Issues like I think are important to consider.
I don't know. Part of me, I still like the notion, I don't know, of an alternate retelling where it's like a new ending to the series. Because not only do you get to like relive like the world and the characters you like again, but you're not just like sitting there going, oh, I know what the ending is. But at the same time, you already have the satisfaction of having a ending. So if the movie's ending sucks, you're like, well, the series is better. The end.
And when are they going to make an anime where you watch it on TV and then it stops and it asks you to pick the choice and you like click a button on your remote and then
it
continues.
Oh, like those old Goosebumps books.
Yeah, like one of those
books.
Create
Your Own Adventures?
They are. They're called the shoujo games.
Yeah, well, just to say that, like, video, visual novels do that. Like, they have controllers, and you actually, like, make the choice with your DVD remote. And, but that's more like just reading text, you know?
Yeah.
So when are we going to see actual anime?
It wouldn't be that difficult to do. I mean, you just have to film, like, the same movie 6 times. Or 36 times.
It'd be like Heavy Rain, the game. Kind of.
Yeah, maybe that would be a little...
Yeah.
Except a lot less like Saw, and probably a lot more like, yay, I'm Moe, yay! Look at me, I'm cute.
Moving on.
And when you combine them, you get Higurashi.
Oh, it's so true.
Oh, God. Jeez. Kind of a way to round this out is, I don't know, maybe everyone could just say off the top of their head, like, a movie that they really like, and then a movie that, they feel maybe does a disservice to the series. Like, you would say, no, don't watch the movie, just watch the series.
Well, on that sense, I don't know if this necessarily counts because it's live action, but it's kind of a mixture of addition to the series on top of the retelling of the series. The Death Note live actions, I think, were a little bit unnecessary.
Yes.
Yeah.
They suck.
I liked them.
They don't suck. They don't suck completely. I mean, there's a lot of good to them.
Mm-hmm.
The actors that they chose were pretty decent. Specifically, L. He was very good. But they.
Ichi Matsuyama.
Yeah, Chris.
Can I just make one comment on L Change the World?
Please do.
The one thing that upset me the most about that movie is they made L out to be this fantastic investigator that he could solve just about anything with hardly any help from anyone. Yet, spoiler, in the series, he gets fooled by Light Yagami, and they make Nier out to be a better investigator than L, and makes L look like kind of a tool in the end.
I know, it's like the, I don't know if anyone will get this reference, but Ender's Shadow to Ender's Game, where in Ender's Game, Ender's like the character, and he's the intelligence, and he's the strength, and he's the bravery, and he gets it. And then when you read Ender's Shadow, which is the same story from another character's point of view, you realize that Bean was in charge of everything, and Ender just didn't know it. It demeans everything you found entertaining and everything you found inspiring about the character. It's uncalled for and unnecessary.
Yeah.
But anyway,
so,
that was my input.
Oh, I got a really good one.
Go.
The X movie is the most disgusting, twisted, horrible, despicable, atrocious.
Oh, man.
One more.
Deplorable,
yes.
Good job.
Atrocity of a movie.
It's
that
terrible.
I've ever seen. I've seen the X series like 3 times.
It's so good.
I tried to watch the X movie 3 times, and I don't think I ever made it more than 10 minutes.
Jesus.
It's that bad.
It's terrible.
Now, it might not have been quite as bad if you watched the movie first, but then you'd never watch the series.
The series is so good.
So. Oh, please.
I actually kind of have a positive one. I thought the Bebop movie was really good. And I think Bebop, because it's so episodic to begin with, and we actually have a review of it later, so I won't say too much.
Yeah, we do.
But because it's kind of episodic to begin with, you know, you kind of have these, like, little story arcs which progress, the big story arc, that are only, you know, 1 to 2 episodes anyway. Like, I feel like the movie it lended itself really well, because to have, like, an hour to tell a mini story arc, or an hour and 40 minutes, however long it was, I thought it was a very good compliment to the series. That was kind of if you're a fan of Cowboy Bebop, you'll enjoy it. If you've never seen Cowboy Bebop, you won't be lost, and you could get interested in the series. And
so it kind of takes place in the middle of everything then.
Yeah, it's just like its own standalone thing. It's kind of like the Bebop goes and has this job. I mean, that's really, it's kind of like an elongated episode or two that's just kind of on the side. But it's not on the side in that it's like, oh, this sucks. It's just kind of a little... Like I said, if you really like the Bebop characters, you'll be pleasantly surprised. It doesn't suck, so if you don't know it, you're not going to be like, oh my god.
So it's like for the fans who feel like they just need a little bit more to get through the finishing of the series.
Yes.
Who's the plan?
I have
love
one.
It like a brother.
Right,
I have a positive one.
Hit me and put some stank on it.
What
gladly
he said.
Yeah. So, I don't know. My favorite anime movie of all time was... It's definitely Gundam Wing Endless Waltz.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that is a perfect complement to the series. And even for somebody... Actually, even for somebody who hasn't seen the series, it's good.
Do I still want to shoot Rilina Peacecraft in the face?
Oh, yeah, everyone does. It's a natural reaction.
Okay. I'll keep that in mind.
Have you not seen it?
No.
Oh my god, watch Gundam Wing just so you can talk about how you want to shoot her in the face.
I will.
You don't need to see much of it. I'll show you Endless Waltz. Okay. That's pretty much all you
need
to see.
You can just watch like the first 5 episodes.
Don't watch Gundam Wing.
Oh yeah. What?
Don't watch Gundam Wing. I couldn't get past episode 3 of that series.
Your mortal enemies with me.
That's okay, Chris, I got you back.
Okay.
No offense or anything.
So, Chris, do you have an example you'd like to share?
Yes, for a good one, I have Evangelion 1.0, You Are Not Alone.
It finishes the series, not crayon!
Yeah. it has improved animation, backgrounds. It condenses the first, I believe, 13? Or maybe...
I think it is 13.
Yeah, the first 13 episodes... I think makes it far more entertaining and not drawn out as long as the 13 episodes that you sat through. And after seeing that, I was drawn in a lot more to the story than with the actual series. So, and it's kind of somewhat of an alternate telling of the series. So.
And a bad one?
And your bad example?
Bad one? I'd probably say... I believe it's called Parasite Dolls, which I think, if I remember correctly, is kind of a, not necessarily a spin-off and not necessarily a continuation, but I guess it, within the same universe of AD Police. It's I will say this, it's a complete rip-off of Blade Runner.
Blade Runner, okay.
And it's so boring and... I don't know why I bought it.
It was just one of those days, man.
Yeah, it had an interesting cover and, you know, that pulled me in and I watched it and I was just completely disappointed.
Oh, visual puffery.
Yes.
Those
yeah.
Bastards.
That should be illegal.
Yeah.
All right, so that kind of rounds it up, but, you know, if you're listening and you have a favorite anime movie or you think we're on track, go to the forums, talk about it. Let
Especially
us know what
you if
think.
You think we're on
track.
That's
right.
Yeah, because we might be. No, we don't endorse drugs here.
Whatever. I'm not. I'm better than all of you.
Okay,
that's a joke.
That's a joke, guys. Anyway, so if no one else has anything else to add, we're going to take another quick news break with Kimiko. And when we get back, we have some really great reviews for you guys, and you're definitely going to want to hear this review on Cowboy Bebop, so.
Much better than subpar reviews.
Let's do this.
Yes. We'll see you back in about 3 or 4 minutes.
Kimiko here again, corrupting your mind with anime news. According to Right Stuff International, Funimation Entertainment issued a recall for Darker Than Black Season 1's release. The release was scheduled for March 23rd, but consumers started reporting a problem with the third episode of the third disc in the set earlier that week. But we reviewed it on Session 14, so give it a listen, see if it's something you're interested in, and if you are, hold tight, I'm sure it'll be on your way. In a tid. Minori Shiraishi, the voice actor of the character by the same name in Lucky Star, will be launching a spin-off series of the live-action TV shorts called Lucky Racer on April 2nd. Shiraishi is going to compete in kart racing with the staff and voice cast of the anime, and the winners can then debut products or publicize themselves. Lucky Racer will run within the Saitokai no Ichizon anime's time slot when the BS11 Podcast Satellite Channel runs that anime on Fridays at midnight. The Kadokawa Anime Channel will then start streaming each Lucky Racer episode on Saturday, April 3rd. For those of you familiar with the Korean fantasy massively multiplayer online role-playing game Maple Story, on Wednesday it will feature, in Japan, an official Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood tie-in campaign. For a limited time, starting on March 31st, MapleStory will offer Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood tie-in items such as character costumes, weapons, and items of popular characters, as well as items related to the series, such as the Armstrong family treasure. The second phase of the campaign will run from April 26th to May 26th, and the players can find these items randomly inside Gashapon vending machines within the game and at point shops. There will also be a special MapleStory item coupon bundled with the 9th DVD and Blu-ray volume of Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood on April 21st. The coupon can be redeemed for more Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood items. And that is it for this week's anime news. Until next time, I'm sure you'll miss me, right?
Welcome back to the 30th session of the Anime Addicts Anonymous podcast, where we strive to make your addiction just that much worse. And right now, Chiaki is going to give us a review on our first anime for the evening, user-requested anime.
What if they're listening to this in the morning?
Then Ohio.
Alright, this was requested by Mikhail on the forums.
Love you!
Thank you! It is the sequel to the 2004 Appleseed movie. It came out in 2007, and it's Appleseed Ex Machina. And just so you know, Ex Machina is Latin for from the machine. Its runtime is 105 minutes, so it's, you know, your standard movie length. And just so you know, it does kind of reference a little bit in relationships in the first movie, and it kind of flashes back to the first movie, but it's not really... You're not necessarily required to watch the first movie to get this movie. So I'm just kind of putting that out there in case you're like, oh, well, I haven't seen the first one. It is CG animation. I reviewed Vexile last week. It's much better than Vexile's. I actually liked it a lot more. It has a better consistency in style, and it keeps everything in the same kind of cel-shaded-ish style. And it even has like things like subtle line art, so I liked it. It had good movement and things like that. I'm still not a big fan of the CG animation anime personally, but I don't know. Some people like it. It starts out by kind of setting up the place and the location, and if you've seen the first movie, it'll be kind of a refresher. It starts out in the year 2133. And more than half of Earth's population was killed off in a global nuclear war. The planet itself, as a result, was kind of, you know, crumbling into an uninhabitable state. So humans created a place called Olympus, which is kind of like a utopia for survivors. There's a lot of Greek and mythology references in this movie, by the way. I kept hearing them all throughout the movie. Other countries and places exist other than Olympus, but they kind of suck. In Olympus, there are these things called Byroids, which are humans who were saved from the war, and they were, like, rebuilt into cyborgs, but they're different from cyborgs because they're engineered or grown or created to never feel hate or anger. They're oftentimes used as diplomats or combatants and charged with controlling order because of that. Like, they'll never act irrationally out of hate or anger. So you start off by meeting two characters that were in the previous one, and that's, I'm going to butcher the names in this, and I apologize everyone, but, like, even after watching, it's...
Dunin Newt.
Dunin. I can't say her name. I'm really sorry. Dunin. She's the main character, kind of a badass, and she's the partner of Berios, I think. I'm really sorry. I even couldn't get it from watching it. I tried saying it all throughout the movie. It opens up, you have this combat team, and you're getting ready to move in, and you have those partners. And it kind of sets up, you know, the theme of the movie. Like, there's a cool quote, it has a heartbeat, a high-tech cyborg wearing an analog watch, look at that. And Berios was like, it has a heartbeat like I do, and it was just kind of an interesting thing to start the movie with. Berrios is like this special. He's a cyborg and he looks differently. I guess his body had been rebuilt into this cyborg body, and his cells kind of merged with his suit. Lots of action right off the bat. They storm this cathedral thing where there's kind of, you know, terrorist actions going on. The part of E-SWAT, which is the elite forces protecting Olympus. And Berrios protects Dunin and gets put in the hospital. And while he's in the hospital, she kind of gets assigned a new partner called Tarius. Tarius, I'm so sorry. Someone's going to put it on the forums. You cannot say names, and I really apologize. I know what I'm trying to say, but I can't. And he looks exactly like Berrios. He's a Byroid, and he was created with Berrios's data, like his biological data, because Berrios is such a badass and could merge with this suit called a Heckenhire suit. And again, that goes back to mythological. Heckenhires were like multi-faced and multi-armed people who I believe were the assistants of Hephaestus to forge. Anyways.
He's more than his mother.
Yeah. So, of course, you know, Dunin is kind of like, oh, you look exactly like Berrios. I don't want a new partner. Berrios and her have kind of like this love thing going on. And she's just kind of like, I don't know what to think, what to do. So the world that they kind of show is this cool futuristic world. It shows, you know, her going around, and she meets up with her friend who's named Hitomi, and they're like these things that you can put on your ears that like go over like a hologram over your eyes that are like, I don't know, the iPhone 0.6.
iPad.
Exactly. It's the iPad times a million. Berrios gets out of the hospital, and they meet at Hitomi's birthday party, and there's just tension out the wazoo. There's just like physical tension that you're just like, what's going to happen here? And then there's like political undertones and overtones at the same time. Olympus wants to have control over the global satellite grid. And, you know, there's with the recent cyborg terrorist attacks and the possibility of manipulating civilian cyborgs. A big cyborg component company called Poseidon is being kind of looked into, and you get a shady vibe for them right off the bat. And so, kind of using this escalating danger climate of fear, a large summit is called from all the leaders of the world, and they use kind of this fear, and then all hell breaks loose, another terrorist attack at the summit. And so the leader of Olympus is trying to use this fear to try to manipulate everyone into this global satellite kind of orbit that Olympus will control. And so it kind of goes on from there with, you know, what are the terrorist attacks, and I'm not going to really spoil anything else, but that's all in, like, the first quarter or so of the movie. So it just kind of goes on with, you know, following this kind of budding love triangle of what's going on and what's going to happen with the cyborgs and things like that. It kind of had almost a Ghost in the Shell feel like to me. I kind of thought, I saw Dunin like Major and like Ghost in the Shell, you know, cyborgs and people controlling them and humans in them. The soundtrack is okay. A bit obnoxious, I thought, at times, but not terrible. And it had really good voice acting. That's something I really liked about it. And it had really good emotions. But the problem that I had with it is at its core, it was just kind of like your run-of-the-mill action movie. It had these themes, but it was like, it set up this world, this post-apocalyptic, really interesting world. And then they just said, here's a problem that's come up. It really has nothing to do with the world. They solve this problem, and then it goes back to where you started. So you really didn't feel like it progressed anywhere. I personally, like, it didn't have any deep meaning or soul-searching. It was good. It was interesting. But it's not going to change your life, and it's not going to touch your soul. So I would recommend it for people who like sci-fi, who like mecha, Ghost in the Shell type animes. And I would give it a 3.5 heck and higher out of 5.
Sounds intriguing.
Indeed. Yeah, it wasn't bad. I don't know, like I said, it just wasn't anything special.
Yeah, I've said it before that it's, you watch the two Apple Seeds more for their art style than anything else, because the plot is nothing new that you've seen before.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not even like it progresses anything. Like I said, it's like you have this really interesting world, but then they don't focus on it, and then you're back at square one. It's like there was no progress made.
Yeah.
So, in any case...
Thank you for that.
Of course.
I watched the first Appleseed, but since it didn't make a particularly monstrous impression on me, I decided that when the second one came out, I didn't really care. That's my honest opinion.
It was honest.
Everybody who listens to this podcast knows that I review anime harsher than anybody here, so...
I will say this too, Boom Boom Satellites is awesome. The first Appleseed is what turned me on to them, and I've been hooked ever since.
Yeah, I just remember there being one... I watched the first Appleseed movie so long ago, but I remember there being one particular scene that was cool where they're like in slow motion, like in some kind of like a medical lab or something, and
yeah,
I don't really remember. Anyway, so who wants to go next? Mm. I guess I will. So I'm doing an anime that is very new called Eve no Jikan, or Time of Eve, for those of you who want to look it up in English. This anime, it came out in, like I said, it's new. It came out in the summer of 1998, and it didn't finish till towards the end of 2009, so it took a while for them to release it. But the director is Yasuhiro Yoshiura, and it's considered an ONA. Like, we've heard OVA, and some people call it OAV, but this is an ONA. So let me explain. An ONA is an original net anime, which is basically, they were originally fan-made works or independent animes, so I guess like independent films. However, Studio AIC was really the first studio to make a studio-released ONA, and so that's what this one is. And the animation's really good. Like, it's very, it has a lot of, not like CG, but you can tell it's got a lot of the new age computer stuff in it. And it's very crisp looking. The warm colors almost remind me of like a Makoto Shinkai film. Probably more Voices of a Distant Star than anything. Probably the biggest drawback about the whole anime is the music. Other than the opening theme, actually it doesn't even have an opening theme. It's the ending theme that I like. It's kind of like a little tune. It doesn't really have much like sophistication to it, but other than that, I really can't think of any music in the whole show.
That's sad for the animation style. I feel like it would benefit from some good music.
Just to clarify, the whole anime is made up of 6 15-minute episodes, and doesn't have a whole lot of characters either. The main character is this boy named Rikuo, who, I guess characters have to come after plot. So anyway,
they don't have to.
This anime is about, it's in a distant future, they assume that it's Japan, and there are cyborgs pretty much everywhere. They're so much a part of your daily life that you'd wake up, walk out into your living room, and ask your android for like a cup of coffee, and they'd make it. And the androids have like these little glowing red halo rings above their heads that have like data on them that let you know that they're androids. It kind of reminds me of something from like The Sims.
Or Chobits
or something. But like, this anime... really had, like, the first episode really had a strong impression on me because of the concept. It was the first time in a long time that an anime really made me think about something, because my brain's so polluted, and, like, I feel like my IQ is, like, 50 points lower than it was before the moe trend started. But, basically, it deals with the concept of androids wanting to be human. You know, the androids can think and feel for themselves, and that scares people, but, you know, it's basically like a human rights type of concept that's been in like practically every android anime ever made. But that's not what makes this anime original. One day, Rikuo, who's the main character of the story, his android, whose name I don't really remember, disappears out of his house, and he's like, where is she, you know? So he checks her data logs and finds out where she's going, because he didn't tell her to go there, so why is she going? You know, they're not supposed to be autonomous.
Mm-hmm.
And he finds out that she's going to this cafe called Eve, and it's one of those like cafes that basically is like a staircase in the side of a building, and you basically just, there's like a cafe underground, one of those shady looking deals. But you walk in and they play like this like groove music that lasts like 15 seconds. That's like about the extent of the music.
Mm-hmm.
But the rule of the cafe is that inside the cafe, androids and people are treated equally. And when you're inside the cafe, the ring above the androids' heads disappear. Hmm. And just to clarify, the androids in this anime look identical to people. Really, the only way you can tell that they're androids at all is by the ring. And with it removed, you have no way to know. And so that's why the cafe is interesting, because you're supposed to treat people equally in there. And so you've got this atmosphere where Rikuo doesn't know who's an android or not, and he sits down, and someone comes and sits with him, and he doesn't know really how to interact with them, because he doesn't know if they're android or not, and he's very uncomfortable with this. And that's how the story progresses. Each episode is named after, like, one character that a person that basically frequents the cafe. Like, there's a little girl who likes to think that she's a cat. And there's, like, this one episode had a robot come in that was, like, an old model, and you could tell it was a robot. And it could barely, like, function. It was, like, smoking. But it was in there, and you had to treat it like a person, you know?
Right.
So it was really awkward. Like, it couldn't hold the coffee cup because it was, like, shaking, and it was spilling the coffee everywhere. But it's just a very original concept. I mean, sure, like, you can name 100 animes where there's robots that want to be autonomous. I mean, even the friggin' iRobot movie with Will Smith is like that. But none of them have cafes where you treat them equally, and it really brings up, like, a social question. And at the same time, it's almost like an experiment. Like, it's one of those scientific studies where they make, like, fake prisons, and, you know, people start acting like prison guards and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
But,
and that's, like, the extent of the plot?
That's it. Huh. And that's the flaw with it, though, I think. Even though later on in the series there's, like, government issues where, like, the government doesn't want these places to exist, and it happens that there's, like, 200 or so of them across the city, or across Japan or whatever, and so they're trying to, like, hunt them down. But, that's not really that important, really.
Right.
It's, like, the last 10 minutes of, like, the 90-minute total that is this show. But It does get a little bit old, where they just, like, talk to a new, they focus on a new person in the cafe every episode. The first episode had a great impact, but, you know, second episode, third episode, starting to dwindle, and then by, like, the fourth and fifth episode, I wasn't really that, like, the shock value had gone away. I was too used to the whole being in the cafe with the android experience. But this is a really wildly popular show, and I'm going to give it... I'm kind of torn, but I'm going to give it 4 Eve blends out of 5. That's the name of the coffee that everyone always orders. Eve Blendo.
So, do they have, like, stuff for androids to drink, and then stuff for humans to drink?
Are you curious because you're like, how can an android drink something?
Yeah.
I seem to remember there being some kind of an issue with the old android drinking something, and him, like... Like I said, this anime came out over the span of 14 months. So, you know, you're barely hanging on to, like, what happened in the last episode.
Mm-hmm.
But there are not multiple coffees for different... Mm-hmm. Because you're not supposed to know. If there was, it would defeat the purpose of knowing,
sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, that is Time of Eve. It's short. Check it out. It's perfect for an anime club. And, that's about it. I really recommend that most people check it out, you know, just because it's kind of unique.
It sounds nifty. Okay, so it looks like I'm next, and I'm going to be doing a semi-retro review of Cowboy Bebop.
It's retro.
It is
a retro. Isn't that funny? It's retro. Huh?
It's a retro. It's strange. That's why I said semi, because I didn't want to admit that it was now officially a retro anime.
I was like 12 when this anime came out.
I refuse to admit that it is anime.
I really don't want to think about it. I'm so old.
When this anime came out, Chiaki still had 5 more years before she was born.
I know.
When did it come out?
Like 1998.
98. Yeah, I have 98 is when it came out in Japan, and 2001 is when it came out in the U.S. America. But
Big America.
Texas America.
America.
Wonderful. So anyway, obviously, my review is for Cowboy Bebop, and so I'm going to start with this, you know, blessed outline of awesome that Chiaki has created for our reviews, and go on to the animation style, which, you know, because it is a retro anime, it's not the most clear-cut, you know, fancy sort of animation that we're getting used to. There's, but yeah, so in terms of, like, the sci-fi aspect to it with, like, the ships and space and everything, the animation is very, very well done. And the people, you know, it's not, like I said, it's not as clean, but it's still, like, Spike is still smexy as hell. And I'm sure a lot of guys find Faye Valentine very, very attractive. But, yeah, it's, yeah. Well done, Mitzi.
That was apparently the sound of a morning Mitzi.
Connecticut, you little bitch.
And the music. The music, may I just say, is stupendous. Because it's Yoko Kanno, right? Does the music. Yeah. And she did the music for everything. She did the music for Wolf's Rain, too. And it's just, you know, it's got this bluesy, jazzy, and sometimes even, like, a, you know, what would you call it? Like, a southern sort of feel with, like, the harmonicas and stuff. It's just it's all blues and jazz, and it's gorgeous. And, you know, the seatbelts, she has them. And Steve Conte.
Mm-hmm.
See Conte, who does, he did, like, Stray and Wolf Strain, and he does a lot of music for this. He also did a song for Razaphon, and just...
Ghost in the Shell,
beautiful music. I could go on forever about Yoko Kanno and her brilliance. But, anyway, yeah, so your basic main characters are Spike Spiegel, who is the character. He's, like, the main character. And then the three people who... work, I guess, are kind of like the rest of his team, who are Faye Valentine and Edward, who I'm not even going to go into her full name because it's ridiculously long, and Jet Black. And it's kind of like this motley crew of unbelievable proportions because, you know, Edward's like this kid who's like 12, 13 years old, and she's just completely insane and the most brilliant hacker on the face of the planet. And her dog, Ayn, who is like a corgi. Okay, her full name is Edward Wong Hal Pepilu Tversky IV. That's her name.
I love Ed.
Ed is amazing. Ed's like my favorite character.
Up.
And Faye Valentine is kind of like, she's like a con artist, and she has no, you know, accounts of her memory for most of the thing. And Jet is, he's kind of, you know, he's got like a robotic arm, and He's completely awesome, and I want to say he was a cop, and he was a cop, right? Yeah, he was a cop, and it's just, you know, great motley crew of awesome people. Just, you know, they're bounty hunters, so it's all about them, you know, going for different bounties, which in this time period, which is all futuristic, obviously, bounties are sent out to the bounty hunters completely legally to go and... find these bounties and bring them in to the police, and you get money for it. And they even have their own, like, bounty hunter TV channel that's like the Rodeo Roundup. And that lets the bounty hunters know who's on the list for, like, this week. And they can find them, and the first bounty hunter to get them gets the cash. And it's great. It's kind of like cowboys, and which is, you know, space cowboy. I get it. But,
Oh, that movie with, what's that guy's name? Tommy Lee Jones.
Space Cowboys?
Oh, no, maybe that's Billy Bob Thornton.
That was Billy Bob Thornton.
Okay.
Where he made his, like, made a spaceship in his backyard. He was, like, a ex-astronaut.
Right.
Interesting movie.
Yeah.
Good old Billy Bob Thornton. But anyway. Yeah, so, the plot basically circulates around that, and you find out backstory, obviously, about each character, and... how they progress, you know, individually as well as a team. And, you know, it kind of, everything kind of comes together towards the end where it becomes like this whole intermingled individual plot. I wish that they'd have given us more information on, like, the organization that Spike and Vicious were a part of, the Red Dragon, what was it, Red Dragon Crime Syndicate?
Red Dragon Crime Syndicate, yes.
Red Dragon Crime Syndicate. Syndicate, thank you, Chiaki.
Nope.
So that we would have understood a little bit more about what had happened between Vicious and Spike, and maybe even learn a little bit more about Vicious in general. And, you know, for the series, it was 26-episode series, and it had
probably like a 30-70% filler to actual plot thing going on, maybe like a 40-60. So I feel like maybe if they had pulled a couple of the fillers out, filler episodes, and just threw in a little bit more, it would have been a perfect series, because there was just so much win in Cowboy Bebop. I think the characters were really well developed. I think the voice acting in the dub is what I watched. Voice acting in the dub was brilliant, even for, you know, being done in the early stages of when anime became, like, you had to do the dubbing as well as the animation was, or you had to, you know, make sure that the whole thing was a brilliant production. Otherwise, you know, you lost some profit there. I think the dubbing was very, very well done. I loved most of the plot. A couple of the little side stories got a little tedious. But, like, in terms of, you know, finding out about Ed and her backstory and finding out about what brought Spike and Jet together, you know, things like that. It was very fun to watch. And after the 2009 anime season and a little bit of the 2010 fall season, it was nice to watch an anime that actually
was good.
So
is that like cleansing your palate with a bit of sorbet?
Cowboy Bebop sorbet, indeed. It was delicious.
I'm okay with Spike sorbet.
Spike sorbet. Spike Spiegel sorbet.
You mean, spicy. Don't you mean?
I'm drooling.
Calorie sorbet.
I'm worried.
I'm looking forward to it.
Here's the thing. Keanu Reeves can't act, and Spike needs to have someone who's completely emotionally void.
So it works.
Yeah.
It works, but, you know,
all he has to do is deliver 3 or 4 lines right, and he's got it.
Spike has so much baggage.
He spends a whole goddamn series looking for... Anyways. Anyway,
I'm going to give this... I apologize if it's a little high for you people, but I'm going to give it 4.5 Space Cowboys out of 5.
I'd be disappointed if you gave it anything less.
So that's my blessed review for this week.
That's a fair score.
Yeah.
Bebop could have been like 4 episodes long if they really had to.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, but in retrospect, they also could have taken out all of the filler and then put in a bunch of backstory and still made it a 26-episode series.
I will say that it probably has the most entertaining filler ever.
All right, so I believe we do have more reviews.
Yes, I'm doing a review of Metropolis. And before I get started, I will say that there is a connection between Metropolis and Cowboy Bebop.
Really?
Yes. Steve Blum actually played a few background characters.
Legit.
He's credited as the food stand owner, a lamp, and a scientist.
I love how Steve Blum, he can, like, have, like, the main character, but he takes these, like, random piddly roles.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
But, anyway, this anime movie is based off of Osamu, if I can pronounce his last name right, Tezuka?
Tezuka.
Yeah. The, I guess, proclaimed father of anime. It's based off of his manga that he created, I don't know exactly when, but we have Rintaro as directing it, and Katsuhiro Otomo as... writing the screenplay for it. So you have the pretty much 3 big name anime directors, producers having their hands within this movie. And let me get back to where I am. Okay. The character designs, animations, and everything is very Astro Boy-like. You'll definitely tell it with the character designs. And it has a nice mix of animation, hand-drawn animation as well as CG, although you can really tell the difference between the two. But basically the plot follows this Japanese investigator called Suzaku Ben, I believe is pronounced, as well as his nephew Kenichi, as they go to Metropolis to try and find Dr. Lawton, who has been accused of using human body parts in his experiments with android cyborgs, that type of stuff. So they go to Metropolis to find the doctor. But meanwhile, we have Duke Red, who is pretty much the kind of military leader there, who just recently finished building the ziggurat, which is this powerful weapon that he wants to use in order to control the world. But anyway, Duke Red has kind of hired Dr. Lawton to create this robot to control the ziggurat. And he's doing this all under the table, hiding him away and everything. So as this is all going on, there's this underground movement that's trying to lead this rebellion against the lower class and the higher class. Since Metropolis is built on different levels, each level has a zone and its own own class level within the zone. And within each zone, you have these robots, which are assigned certain zones, much like the class. If they move out of their zone, they're pretty much destroyed. But it primarily follows Tenma, which is this cyborg that Duke Red has commissioned to be built, as well as Kenichi, who kind of stumbles upon her while Dr. Lawton's laboratory gets caught on fire, because Rock, who is kind of Duke Red's little, I don't want to say gopher, but he's kind of the person that Duke sends out to do the dirty work and whatnot. So he gets jealous because he considers Duke Red his father, and Duke Red just thinks of him as some kid he picked up along the way that rescued him from poverty. So Rock follows Duke Red into Dr. Lawton's laboratory, finds out what's going on, gets jealous that Duke Red is starting to rely on robots, and thinks that Duke Red is better than that. So he tries to destroy Tenma, but ends up just killing Dr. Lawton and destroying the laboratory. So, for the most part of this movie, it's Tenma and Kenichi trying to find their way to the surface while Rock is hunting them to try and destroy Tenma. And while this is happening, this rebellion is trying to build a ground movement of people so that they can go up to the top level and lead a revolt. So it's very propaganda-ish in style, where, you know, the old movies of way back in the, I guess, 40s and 50s, some of the 60s, it definitely has that type of cinematic style to it. The music is primarily from the 40s. There's really it's interesting to get this type of music in an anime, because there is no Japanese speaking lyrics within the music itself. So it's an interesting mix, because it takes the old I don't want to say old fashioned music, but the music from like the 40s, and mixes it with this very technologically advanced city, yet the technology itself is very reminiscent of styles back into the 40s and everything. It's basically, if you've seen movies from like that time period about like war movies and people trying to lead revolts and everything, it's pretty much basically that. And I probably should have mentioned, too, that the story is based off of a German silent film of the same name. Yes. And it overall, it's basically a class war against humans and robots and people that are trying to fight for equality.
We've had a lot of robot equality.
I know, so... But I'll wrap it up now, and I'll say that it probably has one of the best endings for a movie that I've seen. Has probably the most elegant explosions you can possibly ever see. And that's my most favorite part of this movie is the ending. But I would try and find it and pick it up and give it a watch because I think it's one of those underrated kind of movies that flew under the radar that no one really paid attention to or even knew about for that matter. And that's about all I have to say for it.
Brilliant. It's a Osamu Tezuka inspired film, or originally written by, or something you said, but
It's based off of the manga that he wrote.
And it also has a Dr. Tenma in it, right?
No, I think the closest thing you can get from a Dr. Tenma is the Dr. Lawton.
Where did I get Dr. Tenma from this?
Astro Boy, maybe.
I think you said Dr. Tenma on accident once or twice.
Oh, I could have. I'm not sure.
The reason being is the way, like, Tezuka worked, not to get too far off on a tangent, but he had, like, characters that he reused, like, you know, the character with the big nose and then the looking character, because he organized it like a Takurazuka, like, cast, where it would be the same, quote-unquote, people playing different roles. So, anyways, not to interrupt, but that's probably where any kind of confusion would come from.
But, I mean, Dr. Lawton is more of the crazy mad scientist type of character. But, I mean, that's as close as you can get from a Dr. Tenma type of character in this movie.
Right. And what would you give it out of 5?
I would probably give it 4.5 ziggurats out of 5.
Yeah. Gotta love those ziggurats.
Yes.
All right. Wow. So that's like an average of what? You got like an average of like a 4.2 in this episode?
I can't do math.
That's way better than our average.
Yeah.
We review Batman. I got a good feeling about this new anime season. I think maybe we can pull our average up a little
excited.
Bit.
I'm a little excited.
I'm in the anime. Let's get a good Marvel anime before we have to watch the shit that is Wolverine.
Did either of you choose Iron Man? Did you choose Iron Man?
I chose Iron Man.
Okay.
I claim that she got.
Anyway, so that's the end of the podcast. Just to reiterate, our special guest host, Chris, from the Anime Super Happy Anime Funtime podcast. You can find them on their website at animeshaft.com. So you will be doing him a disservice not to go check him out.
And if you're going to Anime Boston, come find us because we are planning on doing a few special videos that do require fan interaction. So you might be in a video if you find us throughout the con. So
yeah, you can be famous.
Yeah, fame and fortune and free drugs.
And just there was one other thing too that I forgot to mention as well. We are in talks with anime3000.com. to provide exclusive video content for their site on a monthly basis, so keep an eye out for that.
Awesome.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Preemptively.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Anyway, so in closing, you can find us at aaapodcast.com. Don't forget to check out the addnetwork.net and iTunes, where you can find our episodes and come, you know, be our friend on Facebook and all that good stuff.
We like friends.
In closing, the ending theme carrying you out tonight is Kaze to Oka no Ballad from Nodame Cantabile Finale by the artist Rio Paradis. And I guess until next time.
Wunderbar.
It's been a lot of fun.
See you guys.
Bye.
Thanks again, Chris.
You're welcome.